Have you ever wanted to play a pastiche of Aliens, The Fly, Event Horizon, and a lot of the best sci-fi games? This week we're adding to the endless list, Dead Space. Welcome, all. Steve, you're back. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mike.
You're in my top right corner top left corner of my Discord call. Hello. Chris, you are in the top right. Hello.
Michael, hello. I was wondering where Pastiche was going to fit in.
Matt, you are in the bottom left corner. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Well, if you're doing quite well, you can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. Wherever you find your podcast, Podbean is where we are as well. Today, we're adding Dead Space to our endless list of games, which is our list that is currently 77 games long. We've been doing this for a good while. 2 years now, actually. Our anniversary is coming up. It goes from number one, Super Mario 64, all the way down to number 77, Jurassic Park Trespasser. Last week, we added Red Dead Redemption to our endless list, and this week, we're adding another game from that same generation in Dead Space, a 2008 release. And our endless list is currently is judged by graphics, story, gameplay, how the game holds up, its legacy, everything, every kind of metric that you want to. We have a very scientific way we add these games to our list, and not scientific at all, but... Yeah, so which one of us suggested Dead Space?
I think it was me. It must have been a while ago now, but I suggested it just because it was this, you know, hole missing in, you know, the pantheon of games I had played, and it's always been rated so well. So I'm into the genre, I'm into space, I'm into aliens. Figured why not? Now was the time.
Excellent. What's the history of everybody with this game? What's everybody's history? I've never played this game, for example.
I had never played it either. That was my history.
Right. I played it for this podcast.
I'd never played it, but had thought about playing it. And I kind of feel the same way Matt feels, like it was just like a game that one day I wanted to get to. So this is a good excuse.
Yeah, it seems like it. I don't know how it was. I think it was fairly well received at the time. Now, I'm actually looking at my notes here, and it was fairly well received at the time. But this was in a time period for me when I was pretty much out of video games or out of like mainstream console games. This is a blank spot for me too. The same way Red Dead Redemption was as well. I just was not super into the mainstream games in like 2008. So,
yeah, looking it up now, this came out in my freshman year of college. So I had just quit World of Warcraft at that point, so I wasn't trying to game too hard.
What year was it again?
2008.
I'm trying to think. Was I playing RuneScape at that time? I might have been playing RuneScape still at that time. I was a late hold on to the RuneScape classic back then.
I was absolutely playing World of Warcraft. This was like prime. What's the Wrath of the Lich King moment? So
I stopped just before that came out.
Oh, that was like the best expansion. You missed out.
I mean, I was doing other. I had other things to focus on.
Drugs and ladies and alcohol, I'm sure. All the vices.
All the vices, sure.
Everything. Homework. Freshman year. Yeah.
Problem sets, homework.
Homework, freshman year? Yeah. Midterms.
Mike and I were graduated at this point in time and just trying to probably find our way in the world at that point in time.
Yes, absolutely.
I was trying to figure out how to feed myself for 3 meals a day. That was my focus right then.
I've never had that problem.
I was working in specialty pharmacy at the time.
I did a healthy amount of gaming through college, but I do remember being like, you're in college, you shouldn't be playing video games all the time. Go have a social life. But I, in the back of my mind, thought, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I still gamed, don't worry. But I remember thinking in the back of my mind, wow, one day I'm going to graduate and have a job and money, and I can play all the video games I want. So here I am.
Living the life, especially in quarantine. But yeah, so this game was made by EA Redwood Shores, which would become Visceral Games shortly after this game was... Or shortly after the game was released, so a couple years later. Published by Electronic Arts, EA Redwood Shores is like... EA moved their headquarters to San Mateo, California, and they opened EA Redwood Shores to be in their headquarters. So it's like their in-house studio. This game came out in 2008, which was, 2 years after the launch of the PS3 and 3 years after the launch of the Xbox 360. Did you guys know that that generation was the longest console generation?
I did know that. They were out for a very long time.
Yeah. So
I had my 360. I had two 360s, actually, because I had one and it broke and I had to buy another one. And that was like a 10-year period, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, when my Xbox 360 did the classic red ring, I tried the towel trick a couple times and then lost patience. And that's probably in the same time period I stopped playing games for a little bit.
My 360 is so old. It's the one that does not have HDMI outputs on it. Which,
wow.
Like, I can't, like, it blows my mind to think that, like, the 360 has existed in some form without HDMI output. That's like how long it was around for.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing that the 360 came out a year before the PS3. To me, I think that's mind-blowing. But yeah, the first year of the 360, there wasn't a lot on it. There was Gears of War, the first one. Halo 3 didn't come out till 2007. So that was their like big thing. And then the launch lineup of the PS3 was fucking miserable. It was for the PS3, the launch lineup was Resistance Fall of Man was the big game. Call of Duty 3, Ridge Racer 7, Need for Speed Carbon, Genji, Days of the Blade, and Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which also came out on PS2 and Xbox. It's like such a terrible lineup. Like, not even aside from Resistance, no first party real games. So
I have a very distinct memory to throw back how old the PS3 and Xbox 360s are of trying to play Resistance and hiking through the snow to find a Blockbuster where I could rent it, and going to one in downtown Boston and them not having it and recommending we go to Brookline instead. I was with Encore at this time. And we walked through this blizzard to go rent Resistance, and then we realized it didn't have co-op, so we had to like hand the controller back and forth.
That sucks.
So 2005 Xbox 360 launch, 2006 you had the PS3, 2007 is when those consoles finally got some decent games. So that year, Mass Effect came out, Uncharted came out, BioShock came out, Halo 3 came out, Assassin's Creed came out, Portal came out, Modern Warfare came out. So you had all of these like big games. Then you had games like Super Mario Galaxy also came out then, Metroid Prime 3, Stalker, Shadows of Chernobyl. So there's like God of War 2 came out that year for PS2 for some reason in 2007. But yeah, so 2007 is really when that console generation kind of hit its stride. 2008 is when this game came out along with Fallout 3, Left 4 Dead, Metal Gear 4, Metal Gear Solid 4, Mirror's Edge, those type of games. So it really started to get next gen in those types of games. But yeah, so this game I think is one of the initial leaps for this console generation. The PS3 and Xbox 360. At least how I understand it. Do you guys remember early on in this console cycle what you guys were playing for Xbox 360 games?
I have my 360 games sitting right next to me. I was playing a lot of Call of Duty, a lot of Halo, a lot of Dead Island, actually. and a lot of Maddens and a lot of Final Fantasies. So, like, Final Fantasy 13 came out in the 360, so I was playing it on that as well.
Fallout 3 was big for me then. I remember I got deep in it, but played a whole lot of Mario Galaxy. I mean, those games of that era, I think maybe I was more focused on, just kind of just snuck by.
Mm. Yeah, I bought a gaming PC around here, I think in like 2008 or 2009. And I was like deep into like Portal and Half-Life 2 and
oh, right, yeah.
those types of games around then.
I guess that's true around that time too. Mirror's Edge was a lot of fun. I remember like when that came, that felt like a mind-blowing game to me back then.
I played it fairly recently. It's still, I think it holds up. Mm. I didn't play the sequel, but the first one's pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't played the sequel either. First one would be a good one to talk about someday.
I'm looking back on my list of games and like around this area, because I like went back and tried to remember what I was playing like over the years. And the game that I played that I always think of as like around PS3 time being like the next gen game was Killzone 2. Like that was supposed to be like the graphical, like amazing, like visuals game. But yeah, like
That's one of the games that like came out with a trailer that was like not representative of what the game really looked like. That was
right.
One of the first times I remember a trailer being so deceiving. I think it was an E3 trailer or something like that.
Yeah, it was like this gorgeous, like, you know,
yeah,
movie quality production graphics, like, right, trailer of them dropping in on a planet and all the combat. It's not exactly
sidetrack us, but, you know, I mentioned Dead Island, and I don't know if you guys remember that famous Dead Island trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that was
like what the game was.
that was absolutely infamous.
Matt, I'm pretty sure you let me borrow Killzone 2 at the time, actually. I think you came over one time to our dorm at BU, and you dropped it off.
That's interesting, because I didn't know I had Killzone 2. So
maybe we kept it and never came back.
So just some more history of this game. So EA Redwood Studios was primarily known for making Tiger Woods PGA Tour games from 2000 to 2007, but they also made games like Godfather for the PS2 and Godfather 2 for the PS3, which I didn't know existed. I know the original existed.
Oh, I played those games. I remember that. The first one.
And also Dante's Inferno, which was it was kind of like the other game with Dante, Devil May Cry. I think it's like an action adventure type game. But yeah, that game I think is underrated. People talk about that one online. But initially this game was rumored to be a System Shock game. So
it was supposed
to be System Shock 3, which has been confirmed by the developers. But they changed it once they saw Resident Evil 4 because they wanted to go more down the horror path.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
So this game is very... I've never played a game that was more like Resident Evil 4 than Dead Spaces.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely has that flavor to it.
The big difference is I didn't even think about this. Well...
Wow.
Chris, that was just...
Chris is giving a preview of his later remarks.
So Resident Evil 4, you couldn't move when you shot. You had to stop. And that was kind of, when I read that, I was like, that's kind of mind-blowing. Yeah, so when you shoot, you can't move in Resident Evil 4.
I do not remember that. Is that true?
I was playing Resident Evil 4 on the Wii, so it was a different experience.
Same, yeah.
But yeah, so they went down the more sci-fi and horror path, in particular, when they saw Resident Evil 4, because they were developing it from that long. So I think Resident Evil 4 came out in 2004, 2003, something like that.
Yeah, I think 04.
Yeah, so, and then this game was also written by three comic book writers, one pretty famous comic book writer named Warren Ellis, but also Rick Remender and Anthony Johnston as well. So I think they did a pretty fucking good job on the story. I think the story is one of the stronger points of this game in particular.
I mean, to me, it's less story, like as far as a narrative, and I don't know, for me, it's the, maybe it's just the writing that I think is the best. Like it's immersive and you believe it and it meshes super well with the environment. I mean, you mean the story specifically? I mean, what is the story in this game? It's they arrive at the... Let me see if I can remember it. They arrive at a ship with a distress call, and the ship is like this planet breaker or something. It's doing like a mining operation.
Planet Cracker.
You get there. You find that no one's alive on the ship. You go on the ship. You
get encountered by aliens, yeah.
and then you're like, shit, we gotta get out of here. You're looking for like your girlfriend or something. She's leaving you videos. You basically leave you escape, right? There's something with an artifact and aliens. Am I right so far?
You nailed it. Yeah, that's pretty much it. The girlfriend thing I think is so funny in this. Like, why couldn't it just be there arriving at the ship? Why does his girlfriend have to be there too?
That's the motivation for him being there. He chose the mission because his girlfriend was on the ship. So
I
think it's a simple story, but I do think it's delivered very well. I mean, I really enjoyed this game.
I liked the lore behind it. So just to kind of go over this a little bit in further deep. So 23rd century resources are scarce on Earth. So the EarthGov, which is the ruling body of Earth, sends the Concordance Extraction Corporation, the CEC, to gather resources by destroying planets with planet cracking machines, as we said. Before this, there was a guy in Mexico, a guy named Michael Altman. He led a group of researchers to investigate an ancient alien artifact that was on Earth, wasn't known to be alien, in a crater where the giant crater in Mexico, I don't know what it's called, but where the dinosaurs were extinct. They found a marker there. The marker had an electromagnetic field that contains infinite energy. So they were using it to power colonies, and they figured out a way to reverse engineer it. So they brought it to a bunch of colonies, and what ended up happening was a bunch of people went crazy whenever they were around this thing. And when they died, they would turn into zombies, essentially.
The colonies are like off planet, though. They're like not on Earth, right?
Yes,
like different moon colonies or whatever.
Right. So they stopped using it, and the government killed Michael Altman, which turned him into a martyr. And then they created his followers created the Church of Unitology. And the Church of Unitology is what is driving this game.
Like behind the scenes, right? Aren't they like controlling?
Yes. So the whole purpose of the game is you're Isaac Clarke, which is gotta be a mash of Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke or Arthur
100%,
Clarke.
100%. Yeah.
And he's an engineer who's on board the USG Kellyan, I believe.
I assumed Isaac Newton is an engineer. Yeah,
oh, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is his relation to robotics?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the two sci-fi writers.
Right. So he's on the Kellyan. They have to answer a distress call, which he chooses the mission because his girlfriend's on the Ishimura, who issues the distress call. They're a ship that has the planet cracker. They've brought a marker on board their ship for some unknown reason. What it turns out happens is that the captain was in the Church of Unitology, and he ordered them to bring up the marker secretly, covertly. He put people from the Church of Unitology in positions on the ship of power so that they could do this against the law of the EarthGov, which is the Earth government. And it's all a big conspiracy behind the scenes for the Church of Unitology to get a marker out of this planet because they want to propagate the necromorphs throughout the universe.
I do like that there were a couple times there you had to catch yourself from saying Scientology.
I never thought about that, but this is 100% riffing on Scientology. So yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more in depth. I think they do a tremendous job, as Matt alluded to, with creating immersive storytelling. So for a
like
game
all
of the
text
time,
logs and shit like that, like emails.
Well, outside of that, I think the immersiveness of it is when, so the story is primarily told to you through a video screen that pops up from your display. So in third person, it's a third person action game. So you see the display pop up in front of your character and it's a person's face while you're still walking through the environment, or there will be people in another room that are telling bits of the story that you can see off in the distance behind your character, but you're always in control of your character.
Right. And the camera never changes from like a standard playing perspective.
Right. It never goes to like a cinematic experience.
Right.
Right. And you never like pause and like go into a menu that's like paused the game. Like whenever you're like going through your inventory, you are like doing it with the risk that you could be attacked by aliens.
Right. I mean, I think the entire implementation of the HUD and the user interface is like the crowning achievement of this game.
Yeah, it's
like your health is shown by like the like gauge on your spine of your armor. Like all of your ammo counts are shown through like the Halo assault rifle kind of like number behind the
yep.
the gun when you hold it up. Like everything is in universe. There's no like video game part to it.
Right. I think that's all tremendously well done. I will say too, also just outside of like the UI elements that they've incorporated into the world, there's also the lighting is tremendous in this game. I find that the way they use lighting to hide enemies and to make them pop out at you, especially with like revolving alert lights or like flashing lights or when there's like sparks coming up, it's I haven't seen a game, at least in my recent experience, where I felt a sense of horror and dread from lighting the way I did in this game.
Mike, one day we're going to play Alien Isolation and you're going to see what the next step of this is. But I totally agree. Like the light and the sound design, and especially those parts where there's like sparks or like alarms going off, it made it challenging to see enemies coming at me. And like I felt more paranoid being like, I can't really see that well. And if I aim down my sights right now, like I think I see something, I'm not sure. And it definitely like put a chill in my spine.
I'm going to put a disclaimer on a lot of my takes. That a lot of my takes of my dislike for this game are really more stemming from personal preference more than any sort of technical issues for the most part. But I want to touch on the story thing really quick. Like, I hate silent protagonists in games, and I feel like, you know, I didn't care how many times like he looked at like, you know, like a Cortana style, you know, heads up thing in front of him, or like found a text log. I could never get into the story because I felt like, you know, Isaac wasn't a character. He was just an avatar for us, you know, for me essentially. And I had nothing really to contribute to the story, I felt like. And that was like my first like difficulty I had getting into the game was that. But, you know, I hear what you guys are saying, that like a lot of thought was, it's like Resident Evil, right? You love finding, you know, like the journals and the desks and stuff like that. But it just really is difficult for me when your hero character is just a silent observer to all this in front of me. It really kind of takes me out, because like, why would you be quiet during this whole thing?
Have you ever played Half-Life? I'm curious.
I did, yeah.
Like, do you...
forever ago.
Right, did you, I mean, you enjoy those types of games? Like, I mean, these, like, linear kind of
Half-Life was different. Half-Life was different because it felt a lot better. Like, the mechanics, the gameplay mechanics felt a lot better. So I can get over the silent protagonist, but I didn't like the combat in this game, though, either. Which was...
Yeah, I mean, that's different.
Chris, before we get to the combat, I kind of agree with you on, like, the story and, like... The silent protagonist thing doesn't bother me, but I can't say I was particularly interested in the story or these characters or this world too much. Like, it was cool. I think that from a gameplay design, there's a lot that I really liked about this game. But sure. I never felt that invested with, like, what was happening, who the people were... I guess the writing and the voice performances were fine for the other characters, and I liked the way that like they popped up on HUDs and like all those elements, but I never felt like the story was the strongest part of this game.
Another
like pet peeve of mine too is like when you, and this happened, now I will admit I just stopped playing the game about halfway through. Like, I don't like having action scenes or story development scenes play out behind like an impossible barrier that you can't get through. Like, you walk into a room and it's like, you know, a xenomorph comes down and attacks these two characters, and it's like it feels very staged, and it feels like you walk into like a haunted house, right? And it's like something is happening like behind like a barrier that you're not allowed to access, and it I always kind of found that like is a little bit of like a cheap way to create tension. And it was a thing that I thought this game did a lot. I just wasn't personally a fan of. But
couple things. I think that's a technological limitation of the time. So for the error. But I'd also say to you about your silent protagonist thing. Like, dog, I am like the biggest Zelda fan, so I have no idea. I have no idea when you say, "Oh, a silent protagonist." I can't get into a silent protagonist. That concept to me is just like so an outer space for my mindset.
Yeah,
I don't want to
like dwell on it too much, but you know, that's why I actually don't play like a lot of the Zelda games or even the Dragon Quest games, because usually your main hero is silent and
yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's a personal thing. That's just me. So I'm putting that disclaimer up there.
I have a good news for you though. In Dead Space 2, Isaac Clarke is in it, and he's the main character, and he's voiced. So
I hope his voice is high pitched and squeaky.
It is, and it's terrible. It's terrible.
Quick aside with the scripting sort of thing you mentioned with like the animations happening behind, you know, locked doors or whatever it is. If you play this game on PC and you play it, I want to say if you played it 60 frames or 60 hertz, but if you play anything above that too, and something with VSync as well, the animations and the physics, more importantly, are so tied to the frame rate that you can break the game where you can't get in and out of certain doors, and like certain animations won't trigger because like the timing is all screwed up.
Oh,
I ran into that issue pretty early on, and it seems like most people that play this game in like 2020 or 2019 on Steam have to go to this like message board to find the solution. Everyone sort of runs into this, but it's an issue because like, I mean, well, it's an issue for sure, but this game relies very heavily on like scripted events. And that's why I brought up Half-Life as well, because like that's another linear game where so much of the immersion is just through these scripted events that trigger when you hit a hallway or a door or whatever. Mm. So I guess I get not liking that, but to me, I think that even though it's scripted and knowing it's scripted can bring you out of the immersion, I think if you kind of give yourself up to it and just embrace it, it can also be pretty immersive.
One thing I should mention, so Isaac Clarke, he's an engineer. So he gets sent off to kind of fix the ship when you first get there, and he has all these different tasks he has to go through. How he interacts with the world via his weapons is all engineer in quotes based. So he uses basically engineer tools to defeat the enemies, which is the plasma cutter, a rotary saw, a torch, which is becomes a flamethrower, a demolition beam, the line gun is an ore cutter, and then there's the assault rifle, which is something he just finds. So the idea behind that was greatly inspired by the original Alien, which were just random people that had to make do with the tools they had. But I thought that was a really cool piece. I think the way they've crafted this world in terms of making it more immersive is like such an achievement in this game. Like,
and it's subtle stuff too. It's little menu interactions.
Yeah, I did really like how his character was defined by being an engineer, and his tools were engineer's tools. Like the weapons I had the plasma gun, which is supposed to be a cutter. I had the like chainsaw or the buzz saw, the line cutter. I didn't use the flamethrower. I had the assault rifle, but I liked that like he was kind of like picking things up in the environment and like enhancing them exactly like they do in the original Alien movie, and like that was his way to like take back control of the ship. It was very cool.
Yeah, what guns did you guys use? I used the plasma cutter primarily. Sometimes I use the saws on the little guys that would burst out of other things, and then I use the line gun, and the assault rifle was like the backup.
Yeah, that's what I used too. Those
guns. Yeah, I didn't even buy the assault rifle. I just used the line cutter, the line gun, or whatever it was called, the buzz saw, and the plasma cutter. I just knocked all those out.
I quickly realized the plasma cutter was the way to go.
Yeah, that was the thing I put the most resources into upgrading. The plasma rifle or whatever, the assault rifle, was good for like crowd control, but it was really hard to like pick off limbs with it because you're just firing so many bullets.
The issue for me was that the ammo they give you, like I went down to 3 weapons instead of using 4 because I wanted to just use those weapons, and if you pick up a 4th weapon, you'll start getting ammo for it.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to like kind of condense all my pickups.
Yeah, I did have to. Use like the buzzsaw. It was kind of like my saving ammo weapon because I would just like use the one blade, and you kind of like use magnets or whatever to hold it out in front of you.
Move it around,
and you just move it around, and it's like one bullet essentially that you can use to take out a bunch of guys.
So it's interesting that the plasma cutter, which is essentially just the pistol option, in this game is the one that everybody uses, because the big focus on this game was what the development team said was strategic dismemberment. So when you interact with enemies, you can't just do headshots. Sometimes headshots don't work at all, and sometimes they actually have negative effects in this game. So they'll like charge after you if you shoot them in that in the head.
Like morph into something else.
Right, so you need to take off limbs in order to really get their HP down in this game.
Yeah, it was well executed. I really enjoyed doing that. It reminded me a lot of the RE2 remake, because in that you're also kind of conserving ammo and picking your fights. You can like blow out people's kneecaps, and they're still alive, but they're just easier to dodge.
Right.
So to see it done so well back in 08 or whatever it was... it didn't seem cheesy. I don't know. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and the reason the plasma cutter, the pistol, worked so well is because you had like a line of shots. It was either like horizontal or vertical, and you could switch it. And like certain enemies, depending on where their arms or legs or whatever their appendage they had was, like you could switch back and forth. And it was just so versatile to be able to use like horizontal lines to cut off legs versus vertical lines to cut off arms.
And it was like good mechanical depth too. That you were getting good at it if you could rapidly switch between horizontal and vertical and take out a guy's legs quickly. So I think it was fun to play. Yeah.
Positive things I'll say about the combat was I actually thought the plasma cutter, when using it as a melee weapon, felt very good, and it felt very satisfying to take down. One of the aliens, like using it just as a melee weapon. That was like, I found myself like doing that a lot when I had no reason to do that, just because it felt so good and satisfying to do that.
Same with the stomp. You get like the stomp attack.
Stomp's really good.
And just being able to like stomp. There were a couple times where I just had a tough battle, and at the end of it, I just like stomped on the last guy, like NFL Blitz style.
I did that a couple of times.
Drive the point home.
Yep. Yeah, but I played this game on hard, and if you are meleeing enemies, you are in deep, deep trouble at that point. Like, it is not really an option that you go to first.
Getting back to my personal pet peeves, though, I hated how tight the camera was during combat, but the thing that kept driving me nuts is that this game uses... Well, I played it on the PS3. This uses L1 and R1 to aim and shoot, and that drives me so nuts that I could not... Like, I couldn't understand why...
Oh, instead of the triggers?
Yeah, instead of the triggers, it's L1, R1, and I was like, I can't believe like how much this throws me off.
Doesn't like Call of Duty do that too? Like, I thought the bumpers for shooting was kind of a thing. Maybe I'm misremembering.
I mean, it's been a while since I played Call of Duty. I feel like L2 puts you down the sight, and then I feel like... I think it's like if one is L2, or the bumper, one's the trigger,
right,
as opposed to the bumper, like... I think I'm just used to games where like you use one bumper, one trigger, or two triggers.
Yeah,
and,
well, you have
this
to
is using two bumpers. I was like, what the fuck? This is throwing me all off.
I think you have to remember change that in this game.
You have to remember too that so Xbox 360 was the first game that had triggers. First system, because like Xbox and
PS2. I guess
Dreamcast
did, but
right. But those were like
many
analog
shooters.
Well, regular Xbox, not Xbox 360, right?
Did regular Xbox have a trigger?
Oh, right, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I don't think they called them triggers back then. They just called them like the secondary button.
I don't remember. They may have been triggers. Yeah.
But anyways, I think that's an artifact of a certain time period, Chris, when they have R1 and L1.
Listen, I'm just saying.
I played it that way too.
Yeah, my personal enjoyment was, that's all.
I do think the close camera was very intentionally done just to be claustrophobic, and you're not supposed to feel comfortable when three guys are coming at you from different angles and you can't see them all.
It was the game very much relies on like that tight camera, and something's going to drop out of a vent like very close to you. I didn't play it on hard, I played it on normal, but, like, I never found the aliens to be overly, like, it's like they're shot, like, once you get over, like, the shock of them, like, kind of popping out of nowhere, they never become, like, that threatening after that point.
I would say that they're, I agree with you, but for me, I think the curve was, like, the first, like, 3 or 4 hours, I wouldn't play this at night and in the dark, and then slowly it got better, and I realized what was happening, and I realized where they were going to come from, and what they were, because there's, the diversity in enemies in this game is very small, so there's...
Did you have to check all the vents in your house before you went to sleep at night?
No, but, like, the lighting and the sound was, like, very, for me, that's what was scary to me.
I was going to say, the sound kind of made... Even though, like, I knew I could beat the enemies, it was the sound cues and things like that just... I was always on edge just from the ambient noise, and then once it was for real, I don't know, it added tension to the combat.
The one thing I didn't write down, but I remember, is the... You mentioned the ambient noise. So, like, there's, like, the hum of, like, the air coming into this ship that's constant throughout this game. Or, like, fans that you hear in the distance. That is
You're going to these, like, functionally different areas of the ship, too. And so they all have their different, you know, like... You're in the engine room. You're in the, you know, the defense cannons area. Like, they all have these different sort of soundscapes to them.
Right. The engine seems very poorly designed from a perspective of anybody working in the engine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what else do we have here? So the other ability, there's stasis and telekinesis, which seem like they're just kind of, feels like they're kind of bolted on. You can use them in combat, but they don't feel like they're fully integrated in this. There's some, you need to use them for puzzles, but... And again, you can push guys and you can freeze them.
You didn't think stasis was important into the game at all?
No.
Because in the hard?
Yeah, like, I'm sure in hard
it was extremely important, because there would be so many guys and you had like such a small margin for error that you would need to like strategically slow certain enemies down so you could take them out.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I can see that. Yeah. So what else?
What about the puzzles?
They weren't very, very puzzly. They were pretty easy.
They were puzzly, but I thought they were cool. Like
slowing down a door that's moving really fast. Well, that's like obvious that you need to slow them down.
Bigger sort of picture, like the whole thing with the releasing the asteroid that's like captive on the ship that they were mining from.
That was pretty cool with zero G stuff.
Yeah, and having to like zero G jump like onto it to go out in outer space. Which we haven't mentioned, like the whole switch from vacuum to back inside the ship. Like when you go in the vacuum, it's sick. Like it's a whole different, you know, like audio design.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really cool how like that was done. Like how like the volume, like, you know, there's like no audio really. You're just in the vacuum. And, you know, I mean, that's like one thing I got to say about this game. Like everything it did, like from a graphical and, audio standpoint, like the fact that it was from like whatever it was 2007 2008, this feels like a game that's like light years ahead of other games,
right?
On that
level. I think it aged well.
Yeah,
like if you told me it came out like in 2012, like I would totally believe it. And I was like blown away when I realized like how long ago it had actually came out for how good it looks and sounds.
And those zero gravity parts were some of my favorite parts of the game, because you'd be like, you have your like magnetic boots, so you're still walking around like normal, but then you can point up at like the ceiling or a wall and just kind of like jump to it, and you're like in this now like completely 3D like accessible space. You can go up, down, left, right. Like there's no proper place that you have to be because there's no gravity.
One other thing that I want to briefly touch on that I think was ahead of its time for this game is the upgrade tree on the weapons and the suit. Like that is used in a ton of games now. And it, at that time period, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but they had a very modern upgrade tree for the weapons and the suit.
Yeah. One of the things that I did like it, but it did kind of bother me how, and this was like a difficulty factor, how many times you had to spend an upgrade that didn't get you anything. It just got you closer to another upgrade. And sometimes it would be like three of them to get to the next armor upgrade or damage upgrade. And then also you had to use, what were those, like the nodes that you had to put in?
Yeah.
Some of those nodes you had to save to open doors. So I'd be like, all right, well, I know there was that one door I saw, and I feel like I'm coming up on a boss now.
Well, the doors were really just like treasure chests, essentially.
Right.
They were never tied to progress.
Well, they was tied to like resources like ammo and health, which sometimes you really need.
Yeah.
I'll say in regards to the suit, I did appreciate that rather than try to make like a really sleek, tight looking suit, it's like a kind of like a baggy suit. And I think there was like one point when I upgraded my suit, I was like, oh, it actually got like a little bit baggier. It's not like super formal.
Yeah, changes.
They weren't trying to make him like look like a superhero. Like he was.
It's an engineer like, suit.
But Mike, I would be remiss if we did not reference this on this podcast. Like you and I were saying this either over text or in our chat that like the suit was giving me flashbacks to Space Above and Beyond back from the 90s. It's like that's totally what like the design was, which was a good thing. I was like happy to have those sort of memories of that very short lived sci-fi TV show from the 90s that.
Yeah, I can't. We talked about Exo Squad too, which is the same time period, and I can't believe I can find that on demand on cable. Wow, Exo Squad, go watch it. 2 seasons. But yeah, so a couple other things before we get into a ranking discussion. 2 sequels this game got. So Dead Space 2 and 3. There's also Dead Space Extraction, which was a Wii and PS3 game, and Dead Space Ignition. It's kind of gone dormant. I think that people soured on this franchise at Dead Space 3 because I was watching some videos of people review it. And just on the surface, and the first thing that people were like, so zombies in Dead Space 3, they have guns now.
Oh, that's disappointing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, they may try
too
to.
Long.
They tried to make it more of a. Of an action game to appeal to a broader audience like EA does, but
like Doom,
right? But Doom was good,
yeah.
And that's not EA either. That's
well, no. That? I mean, they were trying to. It became like a Doom game. I mean,
right. But yeah. So, where does this go on our endless list? Which currently goes from number 1 Super Mario 64 to number 77 Jurassic Park Trespasser. Last week we added Red Dead Redemption to our list, which is number 12. You can find the complete endless list on our Medium page, which is linked in the podcast description. But yes,
so
where does this game go?
If I'm thinking about like positives and negatives of this game, because I kind of was a little mixed on this game for all the things that I liked about it. And it was probably like for every 2 things I liked about it, there was 1 thing that I didn't. But like the lighting and the sound design was really good. We talked about like the engineer character, all that, like his weapons, the zero gravity stuff, the stasis, like that I all really liked. But I mentioned that I played this on hard and it was grueling. Like it was really challenging to play some certain, like to progress through certain areas of this game. And I probably put way more hours into it than I needed to. That was my fault for picking it on hard.
I guess I have a question.
That colored my whole experience.
I have a question before we get into it, because I tapped out about halfway through this game, because I kind of found the first several missions to kind of be kind of like, oh, like a variant of like the fetch quest. It was kind of like, hey, you need to go to point A, then go to you're starting at point A, you need to go to point B to get an item, to then go to point C to get an item that you need to combine with that other item you got, and you get a return all the way back to point A. And I was like, oh my god, I hate this sort of shit. But does that change throughout the game? Or is that kind of...
No, that's the way it is.
You never have a choice. You're always going forward to the next spot.
Yeah, and you're always fixing things because you're the engineer.
Well, I don't so much mean it being linear. I mean, like, you got to run to one location to ultimately kind of backtrack to, like, maybe, like, a starting point or a previous point.
I mean,
to kind of plug in what you picked up.
I think that was, for me, like... The fact that you were going through a real sort of space on a ship, like you had to go back to the trolley or whatever they called it, the tram. Mm-hmm.
By the way, the tram, the sound effect for the tram is from the BART in San Francisco.
Oh, that's just interesting.
Directly ripped.
Seems like I've been there now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you're doing, the engineer's job. You're going to these different places fixing things, and then something else broke, and you have to go get the combobulator to put it into the slot and turn the thing on, and aliens appear. I mean, that's the game.
Yeah.
Right.
So it doesn't change. It doesn't change.
Yeah.
I mean, but what's the difference between that and like a Resident Evil 4?
Right. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
I see the Resident Evil comparison.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, I'm recognizing that a lot of my complaints are like more personal preference. It's like Resident Evil 4, like I thought, especially playing on the Wii, like Matt did, like the combat is so fun to me in Resident Evil 4. I don't care what I'm doing in the mission as long as I'm like, you know, blowing some zombie heads off that Wiimote like a boss.
I mean, I thought as the game went on, like, yes, you're still in the spaceship, but the environment seemed like all the different sectors you were in, I mean, they seemed to change enough that I kept staying interested. I got eventually more interested in the whole like religious cult story and how that was going to resolve. But I don't know, less about the story. I was just enjoying playing the game.
Hmm. All right,
that was what I liked about it.
So let's talk about the ranking because we haven't set any numbers yet. So Onimusha Warlords, the number 35. This game is better than that, right?
Oh yeah, way better.
No, but you know, I'm not going to nitpick every what do we do? I'm on record saying I didn't really enjoy this game. I'm not going to like get too much into the rankings.
This game is. I could not. Onimusha Warlords was very dated for me. Is this a game better than God of War?
So that's where
32
on this list. 32. I thought so.
I thought so. I think it holds up better.
Yeah, I mean, I think God of War is very good game. I think this is a top 25 at least. It's 25 of Streets of Rage.
I gave myself a range before I came into this pod, and I put this game between 34 and 22. And
whoa.
The fact that you started with Onimusha at 35 makes me feel good about how I bobbed out that ranking.
Wow.
I don't think this game goes above Dishonored for me personally, because I think that game is overall, from like even from an art perspective, the way you interact with the world, the story is a bit better. I wouldn't say it's like super better, but it is a bit better. I'm not super attached to Batman Arkham Asylum. I could throw that game out the window if I wanted to, but
I could. I agree about the Dishonored perspective, and I really like Batman Arkham Asylum, but I think there are things that Dead Space does that are like notable and like better than probably certain things that Arkham Asylum does. I can't put this game over Dishonored. No way.
Yeah, I think Dishonored, they're similar in that they are like very committed to a certain both aesthetic and like I don't know setting.
Yeah.
And I think Dishonored pulls that on. It's much more creative and it's done at a very high quality level.
There's like a
and
lot.
That's not
more
even
ways,
talking about gameplay. Like just
there's a lot more ways you can interact with that world to accomplish the task that you have at hand in Dishonored. And there's a lot more room for creative freedom. And there's also different paths you can go down where the different times you play will be completely different, as opposed from pacifying somebody to killing somebody is very different playthroughs.
Right.
So,
but even if everyone just played the same playthrough, I think it still accomplishes the same kind of, if you assume it's just a linear game, I think even that linear experience surpasses Dead Space.
Yeah. So, where does this game go in regards to Batman Arkham Asylum?
So
you know, I'm
gonna role play here for a quick second because I found basically zero enjoyment in this game. But other Matt, who was supposed to be on this episode, he actually really loves this game. So. In the interest of trying to change it up a little bit, I am going to try to put myself into Matt's shoes, and it's a little hard because I hated this game, but
it's a noble cause.
But I also know if other Matt was here and he was chiming in, he is a hardcore fan of the Arkham series. As much, I would say the Dead Space series is probably one of his like top three probably favorite franchises. if he were here, this is where he would come in and say that he couldn't put it above Arkham Asylum.
He couldn't?
I'm being his advocate right now. I'm just being his advocate right now.
Do we gotta text him right now?
I personally would rather play Arkham Asylum, so I'm gonna agree with that.
I should have consulted
But there are good things.
Yeah, you're insulting his name.
Yeah.
But I just know him really well. I know right now, like, he just replayed, he played the entire Arkham series during this quarantine, like, for, like, the third time through, including Origins, in under 2 weeks.
Including like, all of them. That is commitment.
All of them.
It seems like an apt comparison between Batman Arkham Asylum and Dead Space. They're both doing kind of the same thing, where you go down a path, and then you come back to another path. They have the samey enemies. They have just the way you interact with fighting guys is punching as opposed to using a gun. I would say aesthetically and from like a lighting and sound design, this game far surpasses Batman. And I didn't particularly enjoy the enemies in Batman at all. And I thought the bosses, especially because they reused the same fucking boss like 3 or 4 times in that game, the giant like brute guy, where I was like, this sucks. But I have no tie to Dead Space or Batman Arkham Asylum. So
yeah, I'll like, say Dead Space was definitely the best looking game that I didn't enjoy. But one thing Arkham Asylum has that Dead Space doesn't is Mark Hamill. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
And to like take the aesthetic argument, like I totally agree about the sound design and the lighting design and everything. But like for me, and this is kind of a personal gripe, like. It was so, I know it leans into like the engineer stuff, but this game was just so drab and bleak. Like it looks good, but the design was super boring to me. It also does something with, there's like, this is a gripe with horror for me, but like I was never really scared playing this game. Like it never really leaned into like the tension and the horror as much as just like the shock and the gore. And that's something I don't really like as much.
That's true. I actually, the only time I had tension, like the tension of survival horror, I thought they gave you plenty of ammo in a normal playthrough. Except the first 3 levels, I didn't realize you could stomp the luggage that glows green. So that was the only time where I ran out of ammo and I was like, shit, this is like a survival horror game. And that tension was way different from the experience after I found plenty of ammo.
The most tension I experienced was playing this on hard. Like running out of ammo and being like, shit, how do I keep going now? Cause I'm screwed. I only have like 2 shots for this gun and 1 shot for this gun.
Before I say that I'm fine with that number 25, I will say that Batman Arkham Asylum is also an extremely drab game with the same setting throughout it.
Maybe the setting not being as varied, but I think the design of that world is way more appealing to me. I don't think of it as drab.
I think that's personal preference.
Done maybe a little more artistically.
Yeah.
I think the game design elements in Dead Space are probably stronger overall.
Yeah. Where do we put this? Steve, above or below Batman Arkham Asylum?
I could be convinced to go. Personally, I would rather play Arkham Asylum, but I know, kind of trying to be objectively, there are certain things that this game does that are better than what Arkham Asylum does, so I'm okay with it going above it.
So what would you prefer?
I would prefer below, but I can be talked into above. I can't put it above Dishonored, though. I think that's a hard
thing. I don't think anyone's trying to put it above Dishonored.
So it's 3-2. Let's just put it at number 25. Does that sound good?
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Cool. So we have a new number 25 in Dead Space. Congratulations on making it into the first... third of the endless list, and too bad Streets of Rage, you've gone down to number 26. And
Streets of Rage is still pretty good though.
Streets of Rage 2 is definitely going to go above Streets of Rage, so I mean, where that goes, how much higher is up for debate, but yeah, I'm fine with 25, 26 for Streets of Rage. So, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, etc. You can find the complete endless list in our podcast description. It's on our Medium page. It's linked in our podcast description. Follow us at It's So Bad Pod on Twitter. It's So Bad Pod at gmail.com is the email address. And thank you all for joining me this afternoon, today, whenever people are listening to this.
what is time anymore in this quarantine life, you know? Whatever.
Yeah, there are no days. It's just
thanks, Mike. Yeah, this
a continuous
good.
Day.
This is a good one.
All right, well, thanks, guys. We'll be back next week with another episode.
See you.
Well, goodbye.